I'm going to begin this morning with some advice from Winston Churchill. In writing about how to give a speech, Churchill said, "If you have an important point to make, don't try to be subtle or clever. Use a pile driver. Hit the point once, then come back and hit it again. Then hit it a third time, a tremendous whack." Churchill was warning against the reality that it is very hard, maybe impossible, we'll find out, to make two different and in some ways opposing points in the same talk. And that's not only true in speech. It's true in conversation. When you say to somebody, "I know you're sick, but you should still be at work," the first part gets lost. It's only what comes after the "but" that people hear. "I know you're upset, but I didn't mean it." "I realize it wasn't what you meant to do, but you hurt me." To make two points in a sentence or a speech is almost to guarantee that one of them will be ignored. But I can't help it. Because anybody who has one reaction to a complicated global situation is either simple-minded or dishonest. Beware the individual with one idea, because one idea can never capture the reality of the intricacies and complexities of human nature and human behavior. I'm speaking this morning about the controversy over the cartoons that were printed in the European and the Danish newspaper of Mohammed that has led to violence, to rioting, to protests, and to an absolute blizzard of commentary all over the world. And I will, in advance of making my own comment, ask a favor of all of you, which is, although I'd be more than happy to hear your thoughts, please don't send me any more articles. I have read scores of them this week, and my delete button will be working overtime, I have no doubt, over the next few weeks, as I decide that I have already decided what I think and don't really need to hear any more opinions, because I have been inundated with them from Europe, from Israel, from America. The interplanetary community hasn't weighed in yet, but I have no doubt that the Martians are blogging furiously, and we'll soon hear from them too. The first point to make, which is pro forma, and everybody knows this, and everybody says it, but it still should be said, is that obviously violence in reaction to a provocation, even a blasphemous provocation, is unacceptable. It's wrong. It ought not to be. And allied to that is that for especially the fundamentalist section of the Muslim world to complain about the cartoons of Muhammad as they run the most vile, unspeakable, and disgusting anti-Semitic cartoons day after day in newspapers throughout the Middle East is at best hypocrisy. That also is true. And as I heard one commentator say, I thought fairly to the point, he said, "I am willing to apologize to the Muslim world as I stand in the largest church in Saudi Arabia." Since there are no churches in Saudi Arabia, he made his point. That is, those who demand religious respect must offer religious respect, and those who don't can't really assume that their request will be met favorably. An Italian newspaper wrote, and I quote, I told you I've been scanning the European press as well, It cannot be that the fight for democracy and the rule of law against armed Islamicists lies entirely in the hands of Israel and the United States, two lay countries with solid religious foundations, while Europe waffles between Hamas payments and the Mohammed caricatures. In other words, this has turned, as a result of this controversy, from a struggle that involves America and the United States to a struggle that involves the Western world. And I think it always did, but it wasn't always recognized. In Europe, it was easy to say, this is a function of U.S. policy. But when it happens in England, in France, in Denmark, in the Netherlands, all of a sudden, it's not just U.S. policy. There is a Kulturkampf, a clash of cultures, that has some serious implications. On British television, the interviewer Jeremy Paxman had a panel of Muslims, and he spoke to Anjem Chaudhuri, who runs a Muslim group in England, and said to him, wouldn't you be more comfortable living in a country that is run by Sharia, by Muslim law? To which Chaudhuri said, who said you own Britain? Britain belongs to Allah. The Islamic flag will fly over Downing Street, and after all, he said, if I went to the jungle, it wouldn't mean that I have to live like the animals. There is a tradition of the West that is sacred to us, and that matters, and that we need to respect. And it is not as though the people calling for religious tolerance themselves have no religious sensitivities, but we have learned to some extent, to a great extent, to deal peacefully, if not always calmly, with religious clashes. And that's a lesson that we ought not to be reluctant to seek to share with the world. There is indeed, if you will forgive me, something rotten in the state of Denmark. But if you stop there, if that's all you have to say, and I have gotten email after email, column after column, that essentially makes that point, that says, look at the globe. Muslims are fighting with Hindus, Muslims are fighting with Jews, Muslims are fighting with Christians, it's time for some Muslim self-examination, and that's all they say. But if that's all you have to say, I think you're making a big mistake. First of all, we have to understand that there are 1.4 billion Muslims in the world. We are not talking about a question that deals with a small village. And what kind of hubris, what kind of arrogance, what kind of ignorance dismisses a community of over a billion people by saying, well, they've all got to change? Not only that, but there is a Muslim country that has a nuclear bomb, Pakistan. And they're soon probably, God forbid, but probably, be at least one more, and maybe more after that. So this is a question that does not allow you to make a self-righteous point and then retreat into our homes and say, all right, now you got to change. It requires a much more active and subtle and informed reaction than defensiveness and self-righteousness. The same newspaper, by the way, that printed the caricatures of Muhammad refused 2 years ago to print caricatures of Jesus because they said it would provoke an outcry. All of a sudden, the picture complicates. The same Western world that told the Muslim world you have to respect free speech is the Western world that in France told Muslim women, you cannot wear the chador to school despite the fact that for Muslims that's an infringement of free expression of religion. The same state, Denmark, that is going through this convulsion can actually fire you if you wear a chador to work, something that would not happen in the United States. This same place, Denmark, had a queen who said, after all, we should be critical of those people for whom their religion is just everything. Can you imagine what would happen to a politician in the United States who would make such a remark? There is a fundamental, and I would say especially in Europe, although it exists in some pockets in the United States as well, a fundamental suspicion not just of violence, but of faith. Of faith itself. One reason, according to one analyst I read, why there have not been Muslim riots in the United States when there have been in Europe is that the United States actually takes religion seriously. Whereas Denmark, the Netherlands, England, even France, not so much these days. And there is not just a clash of perceptions between the Islamic world and the Western world, but also a clash of perceptions between a secular world and a religious world. So how do we as Jews react to this? What do we do? First of all, we realize that there is a certain percentage of the Muslim world that is captured by hatred, by a sense of ineradicable victimization, by an anger that we not only can't cure, but can't even touch. And that there is no measure of concession, of openness, of discussion that will change that core of anger. That's true. But we also recognize that most people didn't burn buildings. In fact, there was a long history before this happened of petitions, of Muslim leaders asking for meetings and being rebuffed, both with the editor of the newspaper and with the prime minister, of attempts to change this in other ways. In other words, there was an attempt at the beginning to work within a system which suggests a willingness to work within a system. Then all sorts of things got out of hand and all sorts of political agendas, religious agendas, some dishonesty, some chicanery, some inflammatory remarks, and the thing all of a sudden became a fire. But for the first time, you are seeing in newspapers across the United States and across Europe moderate Muslim voices. Those of you who have been watching interview shows on television, the Lehrer NewsHour, Charlie Rose, tomorrow morning, I know, based on today's LA Times, with This Week, will also invite Muslim leaders who condemn the violence in the Muslim world and still feel aggrieved about the caricatures. And by the way, just as a parenthetical remark, I then received several emails to show me that, in fact, Islam has a long history of caricatures of Muhammad, to which I only can say that's completely irrelevant. I don't get to decide what is tolerable religiously to the Muslim community. They do. If the Jewish community said such and such a thing is offensive to us, and Muslims decided that it wasn't, I wouldn't listen to them either. If the Muslim community finds this offensive, I am willing to concede that to the Muslim community it's offensive. It doesn't matter if in the 15th century there were caricatures and nobody burned buildings. Sensitivities change and situations change. And we as religious people have to be aware that this touches something very deep, because it wasn't just a depiction of Muhammad. It was a caricature which suggests laughter and contempt. And it doesn't matter that in America there are all these caricatures of Jesus because, you see, it's a Christian society with Christian symbols. It's different when you do it about the other guy. Jews are allowed to make jokes about Jews. Blacks are allowed to make jokes about blacks. Hispanics are allowed to make jokes about Hispanics. And Muslims are allowed to make jokes about Muslims. That's the way of the world. But when a Danish newspaper publishes caricatures about Muslims, you're asking for trouble. So what is our response? Mipnei Darchei Shalom, because of the ways of peace? It is this. It is to seek a dialogue with those voices in the Muslim world that can dialogue. It is to present an opening so that Muslim voices will not feel that they are all being lumped into, well, you're all fanatics, so we have nothing to say to you. It's to ensure that we don't close the door and make sure everybody, all 1.4 billion people, are painted with the same brush and herded into the same room. Because it's not true. There is a diversity of voices in any community, and if we shut our ears, we're making a terrible mistake. We're making a mistake on the political level, and we're making a mistake on the moral level. Every time there is a generalization about Islam as opposed to, say, militant Islam or fundamentalist Islam, I become very uncomfortable. I don't like generalizations outside of my community about my community. They always smack to me of the person of one idea. Someone who is not nuanced enough and subtle enough to see that every community has fissures and divisions. Right now, there is a debate that has just begun that is going on within the Muslim community. But you know, you can have a fight in your family, and if somebody outside the family attacks you, the first thing you do is band together. The worst strategy for the Western world right now is to attack the entire Muslim community. Because then we will shut down the voices of those who have something more interesting to say than just those who burn buildings. We should welcome this, encourage this, stand by respectfully as we listen to it. And not be the cheering section only for our side and condemning everybody whose thought is not in lockstep with our own. Ultimately, I think that what we are looking for is what we read in this morning's Parsha. God says to Israel, I'm not going to take you derech plishtim, the way of the Philistines, ki karovu, because it's close. What does that mean, God won't take you somewhere because it's close? It means you should be suspicious of any path that's too easy. As soon as you shut down your thought, you should worry about it. As soon as you see something in the newspaper and you instantly know what to think, be suspicious. Remember, the Israelites go through a lot of wandering before they reach their destination. The struggle, the difficulties, the reformations, the angst, that will be a part of the Muslim world in the 21st century is not only about the fate of the Muslim world in the 21st century. It is also about the fate of the world. And our dual position has to be to believe in and defend our values without closing the door to those who might eventually take our hands. The essayist Hazlitt said it very well. He said, "Liberty is a love of others. Power is a love of oneself." If we, in fact, can feel and express a genuine love of others, we can encourage their liberty. If what we really love is only ourselves, then what we will cling to is just our power. And believe me, the power of judgment is a big one. I am hopeful that our tradition has taught us to be wiser. One great advantage of the history of Jewish homelessness before we were gathered back together in the modern day to the land of Israel is that we learned how not only to accommodate but how to appreciate the cultures of the world. To be an adequate Jewish historian, you'd have to speak 50, 60, 70 languages. Because we have moved in every country and in every culture, and all of them have enriched us. The Kabbalah was enriched by the Sufi mystics. Medieval Jewish poetry was enriched by medieval Islamic poetry. When the Rambam, when Maimonides wrote his Guide to the Perplexed, he wrote it in Arabic, not in Hebrew, because that was the language of the educated people of his time. It is perhaps a utopian dream to think that that will return. But it is inviting a nightmare to forget that it ever happened. This world is a small place, and it gets smaller every day. We don't learn to live together only by entrenching ourselves in our beliefs, but also by understanding the difficulties, the hurt, the angst, the frustration of the other. As we protest that Jews must be treated well across the world, that the Muslim world must release itself of the poison of Jewish hatred, we also ought to encourage those who might make common cause and let them know that we really do believe that it is possible l'taken olam b'malchut Shaddai, to repair this world under the sovereignty of God, and that God is the God of all of us. Shabbat Shalom.